Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. You can see our blog at kosherscene.wordpress.com. With me this evening is Jeff Elliott from the Zwilling AJ Henkel Company. He will be discussing with us the art of knife skills. He also will be giving a class this coming Tuesday at the Gustibus School, located on the 8th floor of Macy's Herald Square in Manhattan. Talking about the Gustibus School, with me also is Sal Rizzo, the owner director of the school. Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening, Chaim. Thanks for having me on the show.
Good evening, Sal.
Good evening, Chaim. Thank you very much. Looking forward to this.
Jeff, you are going to be giving a class on knife skills. The average person does not quite understand the difference between the various knives, between the various shapes, and also the difference between the various knife companies. There are extreme differences in price. Isn't a knife a knife? What are the differences? How is a knife made? What makes one knife better than the other one, even if it is the same shape?
Well, that's a lot of questions in one question, but I'll see if I can do the best that I can do. You're right in saying that not a lot of people know, what to do with a knife. Not many people have actually had actual knife skills lessons, and this includes, your mother, your grandmother. They were just sent to a kitchen, told to pick up a knife and to start cutting, and they did, and they didn't necessarily have the proper form or the proper technique, but they got through in somehow, some way. So it's really important to learn the proper way to use and hold a knife for, I'm going to give you three reasons, safety, speed, and efficiency. Safety in that, a knife is a very sharp object and we don't want to injure ourselves. Speed in that we all have very little time to get a meal done while putting it in with everything else that we do in the day. And efficiency in that we're utilizing the product that we're cutting in the best way possible with the least amount of waste. So different kinds of knives. The three most basic knives that everybody should have and everybody should know how to use are a chef's knife, a paring knife, and a bread knife. And I'll go through each of them. The chef's knife is usually the largest knife you own. Typically, they run from anywhere between 6 inches to 14 inches, which is a really big range. The average home person wants to use a knife that's about 8 inches long for a chef's knife, or you could go as high as 10 inches. Most professionals use 10 inches. The chef's knife is the workhorse of the kitchen. 90%, 95% of what you do in the kitchen, you can do with this knife. It cuts in a chopping motion, and you use it for slicing, dicing, chopping, meat, fish, and vegetables. Now, a similar knife to the chef's knife is a Santoku, which has become very popular in the last couple of years. It's a knife out of Japan that looks similar in shape to a chef's knife, usually somewhere between 5 to 7 inches, and the nose is sort of snubbed, or what we call lamb's footed. That knife does the same exact thing that a chef's knife, but instead of cutting in a rocking motion, it cuts in a chopping motion. So if you're more comfortable chopping than rocking, that's the knife I recommend for you. And I'll tell you, you're either a chopper or a rocker. Chances are you're not both. So either a Santoku or a chef's knife, one of those is sufficient. The next most important knife is a paring knife. Now, all that a paring knife is a miniature version of a chef's knife. They're typically between 2 to 4 inches long. And what they're used for is things that are small or fine, like holding a strawberry or maybe finely dicing a shallot or a piece of garlic, something that you wouldn't be comfortable using your big chef's knife for. Though, like I said before, you could do 95% of what you do with a chef's knife. You could typically do those things with a chef's knife. You're just probably going to be more comfortable with a paring knife, which is also for paring or peeling. Then a bread knife is the last knife that I say is the absolute must-have necessity, and that's a serrated knife to cut through things that are hard on the outside and soft on the inside, i.e. crusty bread. Not for cutting tomatoes. For that, you should use your chef's knife. And I think that covers it. Did I answer all of the questions? Did I miss something?
Well, how are knives made? What makes them different? If I go to a store and I want to buy a knife, first of all, how do I buy a knife? That's a new question I didn't ask before. How do I decide this is the right knife for my particular needs? How do I decide how much to spend on a knife? Some knives that may be very similar in shape are very, very different in price. Why are some more expensive? Why are some cheaper? What goes into the making of the particular knife?
Well, these are all really great questions, important questions. When you look at a knife, I mean, it's basically a blade and a handle, right? No matter what knife you look at. So why is one knife $20 and one knife $300 or $1,000 or $100? You know, when they're all basically the same thing. And the answer to that is ingredients. Just like when you're cooking something, the better ingredients you use, the better the dish is going to come out and the better it's going to taste. Use something like, you know, really good liver or really good truffles or something like that, you're going to get better dish and better taste. It's the same when you're manufacturing something like a knife. The better the materials that go into the knife, the better the knife is going to be, and usually the more expensive the knife is going to be. So what are the materials that go into a knife? Chief material is steel, and not all steel is created equally. There are certain, you know, there are regular just basic steels, which you're not going to be able to put a great edge on, and you're not going to be able to have that knife hold on to its edge for a long time. And then there are so-called super steels, which can get tremendously sharp and hold on to an edge for a very long time. That being said, to have a high quality, and let's talk about chef's knives, to have a high quality chef's knife, because like I said, that's the most important knife in the kitchen, and whatever you're going to spend on knives, you should put probably 50% of it, the budget, into your chef's knife because it is that workhorse. To get a quality chef's knife, what you want to spend is about $100, which I know sounds like a tremendous amount of money, but a $100 chef's knife will last you the rest of your life, and you'll give it to your children, and they'll give it to their grandchildren afterwards. And then I know at a kosher house, we're talking that means you have to buy two knives, because you need one for meat and one for dairy, so we're talking $200.
Now, let me ask you one question. What about the different shapes of knives? For example, why are some knives shaped like cleavers? Why are some knives with long blades? Why are some knives with serrated and at the front they have what looks like an open mouth? What is that? What are their different uses, and why would I need all those different shapes, or do I?
Well, like I said, the three shapes that are the most important are going to be the chef's knife, the bread knife, and the paring knife. Once you start to go into other shapes beyond those, you're talking about knives that are more specialized. So you can slice a roast with your chef's knife, but a chef's knife maybe isn't the best design for slicing a roast. Maybe if you made the blade somewhat thinner and longer, it would slice a roast easier with less effort. If you need to bone a chicken or bone out a leg of lamb, you know, you could probably use your chef's knife, but it's going to be kind of hard. But if you took a knife and you really made it thin and made it a little stiff and you put a little notch on the end so you can get around the bones, you know, you would have a boning knife, and it's just more specialized. So it's all specialization. It's a little like evolution. You know, the knives evolve to become best at what they do.
How does one keep the knives sharp? When I was a kid growing up in Uruguay, we used to have one guy coming around the neighborhood once a week, the sharpener with what looked like a strange-looking bicycle, where he had one wheel that had something over it, and all the knives got sharpened that way. I haven't seen that in, well, decades, and I don't want to age myself that much, but literally decades.
They're a dying breed. I think there's one gentleman in Brooklyn who still does that, drives a van around and rings the bell and says, bring out your knives. And there's one company in New York City that's been around for 150 years doing knife sharpening, and that's all they do. It's called Westfall. They're in the West 20 somewhere. But anyway, first off, when you're buying a knife, going back to the previous question, and you're spending $100, you're looking for a premium knife. And when I say a premium knife, it's going to have two chief qualities to it. One is a high initial sharpness, meaning it's going to be very sharp coming out of the box from the factory. The second is edge retention. These are both things that are tested in a lab. And edge retention is how long does it stay sharp? Now, for every person uses a knife differently. They have different materials that they're cutting with it. They have different surfaces that they're cutting on. So everybody's knives are going to dull in different ways and different speeds. But the better the edge retention, the longer it's going to stay sharp for you. But when you need to resharpen it, there are two devices. Now, everybody who's ever bought a knife block got this sort of long stick thing inside the block. This is called a steel. This steel, spelled S-T-E-E-L, is used for honing the edge. And honing is different than sharpening. I call honing maintenance, and I call sharpening repair. So to maintain the edge, when you look at the edge of your knife under a microscope, even though it appears to be straight, there are little teeny tiny microscopic teeth called burrs. As you use your knife, these burrs get bent. You hit a seed. You hit the board at a weird angle. You hit a bone. You bend those things. And once they're bent, if you imagine an edge folded over, the knife feels dull. What the steel does is the steel straightens those burrs out, making the edge straight again. So that's maintenance. And to do that, you place the blade up against the steel at approximately a 15-degree angle, which I know is a little hard to imagine, but if you know what 90 degrees looks like, you cut that in half to 45 degrees, and you cut that into thirds, and you get 15 degrees. Then about 5 to 7 pounds of pressure, and if you don't know what 5 to 7 pounds of pressure is, take out your kitchen scale or your postal scale or your bathroom scale and put the knife on it and press down so you can get 5 or 7 pounds, and it'll give you a good idea of what that pressure is. And then you just use the whole length of the steel and the whole length of the blade, alternating sides each time, about 5-10 times on each side. Now, sharpening, you're going to use a sharpening stone, which you may or may not have. You may need to go out and buy. Now, these come in different grits, like sandpaper comes in different grits, because you're actually removing material. Coarser grits remove more material. Finer grits remove less material. The grit I recommend for sharpening knives is either 2,000 or 3,000. A lot of stones come lower, 250, 450. Those are great if you have an actual chip in your blade and you really have to take out a lot of material, or you've broken the tip off and you have to grind a new tip. But for regular sharpening, about 2,000 to 3,000 degrees. What I do is I take my knife and I break it into three sections, and in turn, on each section, I go back and forth on the stove. Same 15 degrees, same 5 to 7 pounds of pressure, about 5-10 times on each side.
Jeff, I have a question. Talk about the actual motorized sharpeners. I know a lot, like I have one because I just find them a little bit more convenient. Can you talk about that to see if they're... Do you like them? Do you not like them? Any brand you recommend?
I'm a fan of them for two reasons. You don't have a tremendous amount of control over the angle. It's whatever angle is set in the machine. And with the rise in popularity of Japanese knives, the angle is getting less and less on most blades, including the European blades have reduced the angle of their blades to react to that. The other thing I don't like about the machines in particular is they go at such high speed that they take off a lot of material, and they also heat up the steel itself. And when you heat the steel, you can actually change the composition of the steel, degrade the quality of the steel.
And speaking of Japanese knives, a lot of times I hear chefs, they'll say that the knife is beveled on one side, like a 70-30. Can you talk about that, what it means by beveling and why the knives are beveled?
So beveled knives are really a Japanese idea. The reason behind this is knives cause damage when they cut something. And when you damage cell membrane by cutting through them, you begin cell degradation, meaning the food begins to rot quicker. Have you ever noticed that, you know, a whole fish, if you buy a whole fish at the market, it's always fresher than if you buy a fish fillet? Because once you fillet the fish, it starts to decay or rot quicker. So the Japanese, since they're eating a lot of their fish raw, they want to delay the decay as much as possible. So So the Japanese developed blades where the edge, the sharp edge, is only on one side of the blade. So we were talking before about edge angle of about 15 degrees. If you imagine the angle, you know, it's a symmetrical blade, meaning, which is like a normal Western blade, meaning it has the edge on both sides. Your total angle of the edge is about 30 degrees. Now, if you remove one of the sides, your total angle is about 15 degrees. The Japanese take it even sharper and make it a total angle of about 10 degrees. So they're trying to cause the least amount of damage while they're cutting through something so that it degrades a lot less quickly. Does that make sense?
No, it's very interesting.
It is very, very interesting. I'm learning a lot from you. But now let me ask you a question. Who is Jeff Elliott? How did you come to all this? What was your evolution from the first moment that you decided that you wanted to be a chef until the moment that you started to teach knife skills, and how long have you been teaching the knife skills?
I've been teaching knife skills for about 5 years. I learned to become a chef when I was, or I started to become a chef when I was about 14, and I won't age myself, but let's say that's a long time ago. And when I took my first job in a butcher shop when I was a kid and worked with a butcher. But then I went on to culinary school at the Culinary Institute of America, and then I worked at restaurants all over the country. In New York City, I worked at Le Cirque and La Bernardin. And then I left the culinary world. I got an MBA in marketing, and I went to work for Zwilling J. Henkels as their director of culinary relations and executive chef. I also do the media relations, the public relations, the product placements. 2 years ago, I wrote a 400-page book on the subject called The Complete Book of Knife Skills, which has over 1,200 photographs to help you through. And I think that makes me fairly qualified.
I would say so. Now, I am sure that during the time that you've been teaching, there must have been some funny anecdotes, or interesting anecdotes at least, that you can tell us. The audience always likes to hear an interesting story, a funny story. I am sure you may have one or two such. Can you tell us some?
Oh, I try not to tell funny stories about my students. You know, the key thing about a knife skills class is all I want people to remember just a couple things by the end of a class, and I want to make sure that everybody knows how to hold a knife and how to move with a knife and how to work with a knife safely. If I can get people out of a class with those three things, forget knowing how to cut an onion or knowing how to cut a potato. They can leave the class knowing those three things, I'm happy.
Okay? Here.
I have to run.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Chaim. That was great.
Jeffrey, and thank you so much.
And we'll see you on the class this coming Tuesday.
All right. Ciao.
Bye. Ciao. What a great... He's so completely interesting. I mean,
absolutely.
Jeffrey, and you need to see the book that he has is so well thought out. There's no book like it on the market. I mean, Henkels has been doing knives for so many years, and Jeffrey's a perfect representation of that company because he understands his product, he knows his product, but also having a chef's background, learning how to butcher, learning how to fillet fish, going to culinary school and now having an MBA, I mean, he's got the whole package, and he's a fantastic teacher. One thing he strives on in this class is he tells people, you can't start cooking without learning how to cut. And it's true. It's the essence of the class.
Well, yeah, we spend so much time cutting in the kitchen, I mean.
Absolutely, and not many people understand that cutting is so vital. Understanding how to uniformly cut vegetables, because remember, if you're making a dish and you're taking time, especially if you're doing it for a dinner party, for the holidays, something that you want to impress your family and friends with, if you're cutting vegetables and you're sauteing them, if you're not cutting them in the correct sizes, they're going to cook differently, and it's going to taste differently. And the essence is to really get the fear out of what a knife is, because people are just, you know, what always irks me when I see somebody with a knife and they start banging it and chopping it, and I'm like, all right, this is, you know, that's maybe the way that you've got taught, but now we're teaching you the right way. It's like going to culinary school without spending $40,000.
Right.
Because the first part of culinary school is, when I went to culinary school, the first week was all cutting. We're condensing that into 3 hours.
So if somebody signs up for this class for this coming Tuesday, what can they expect aside from, you know, a very good teacher? And even over the phone, he was fantastic. I can just imagine what he must be in person.
He's the consummate teacher. He's a wonderful host. You know, what's lovely about this class is they come in. When the class begins at 1 o'clock, we always like to have some food. Jeffrey goes to a kosher caterer, Mr. Broadway, to get some kosher food. The first 45 minutes is all about instructional. It's really understanding how knives are made, the types of steels, how to properly sharpen, and information that's really vital to making you understand the product. And then we ask everybody to go into their stations, and for the next hour and a half, all they're doing is learning how to do the various cuts. So think of it, if anybody watches TV, you know, you'll hear me saying, knives down, hands up, because it's very important that they're focusing. This is not a competition. It's really understanding the technique and understanding the movements. One thing, like Jeffrey said before, is, are you a rocker? Are you a cutter? I mean, what are you? We don't know what you are, and you stop finding out what are you. And then he determines, well, that's great. I see your motion, so you need to get this knife. You need to get a chef's knife, or you need to get a Santuco. And it's a revelation. I know so many people. It's really lovely. One of the ladies that's come in, Edith Fishpack, has been here 3 times. She comes every time because she feels that she can never not learn something. Even though the same principles are made, it gives her that confidence that I know what I'm doing.
So do I understand that each person will have a knife with them, or?
The knives are provided by us, so they just have to come in. We provide aprons, we provide knives, and the knives that they're using is just knives. They're not eating any of the food or nothing that's being cut. The food is just something separate that we like to do, because we never, as a cooking school, we never want anybody to go away hungry or thirsty.
Of course.
It's the purpose of our school. However, but they get to use a Henkel's knife and really understanding what the feel is and understanding what it means to use a quality knife. And why, like Jeffrey said, it's something that you invest in, and $100 is really not a very big investment for something that's going to last you for a lifetime.
Now, over the years, you've done quite a bit of kosher cooking classes. Tell me about some of the classes you've had and some of the classes that are being planned for this coming semester.
Sure. Well, thank you. I mean, I cannot take credit, because I give all the credit to Arlene Feldman-Sayak, who is the founder of DeGustibus. And you know, what I love is that she gave an opportunity for a very distinct market. There was nothing like that, and nothing for the kosher community to really see their favorite chefs on stage live and really learn from their techniques and get to know them. So what's lovely is that having somebody like a Jeff Nathan, who, when Jeff is here, his classes are always 70 or more. He's got a personality that outshines many. That's why he's on TV. That's why he writes books. But he's personable. And what I love about somebody like Jeffrey, because he's a family man, and I really resonate to somebody who really embraces his family. When he was up there with his son, to me, it was one of my most favorite classes, because there was such a love, you know, a father-son respect, and his wife is on stage too. Then you get somebody like David Kalkin. And David is, I'm fortunate to say that David has become a really good friend. David is uber talented. Hearing and seeing that he went to the CIA, worked with chefs like Michael LaMonaco, so he's got this wonderful classic training, but he takes it and brings it to the kosher market to say, you know, sometimes people have a bad stigmatism what kosher food is. It doesn't have to be like that. You have somebody that says creative that could use the products, and that's what's so lovely when people are so amazed and wow about, wow, I never thought of using that, and wow, does this taste really good. So it's wonderful to see stuff like that and seeing the chef's perspective on dishes and foods and what they use and the cuts of meat they buy and where they shop. It's quite lovely.
Well, let's face it, the days when we had the mom and pop kosher restaurant with gefilte fish and brisket and maybe a potato dish, I mean, those days are long gone.
Absolutely.
Let's face it. The kosher cuisine today is a universal cuisine which just happens to follow a set of rules to make it kosher. Other than that, there is no real kosher cuisine.
And I completely agree with you. And I think that's such a great statement, because there is no kosher cuisine. It's the cuisines of many adapted to the rules.
The kosher laws.
And you know something? So you can't use butter. But if you use margarine, or you could substitute or remove it or use oil instead, there's ways of doing it that is really quite lovely. I mean, You know, last year we had Dan Lenchner from Mauna Catering, and what was so fascinating about his class is that him and his wife, Joni, travel the world, and they travel the world, and they don't, from what I understand, they don't keep a kosher home, but their restaurant and their catering is strictly kosher. So they have this vision of going to these locales, and, you know, they replicated dishes of when they were in India. And I was blown away because it's like, well, you know, here they are just taking the spices, taking the flavors, taking the nuances that they knew, bringing back their life experience of their travels and bringing it to their audience. And it really opened up so many people's eyes of like, wow, I can make this at home. And that's another thing, too, that I really pride myself on, because these classes demystify the dish. Because so many people say, I can never make what he makes at home, what she makes at home. Yes, you can. You can make it. And that's what this class is showing you. Because when you see it live, and you're tasting that food, and you're writing your notes on the recipe, you could do anything you want.
So what are some of the upcoming classes? Who are some of the chefs you will be having in the future?
Well, I can tell you, I never like to divulge the chefs, but I will tell you that we're doing one evening class that's going to be a very sexy kosher restaurant that's opening up, that's going to be coming up, which is brand new, that hasn't even opened yet. It will be opening. We have one chef returning that's going to do side dishes for Thanksgiving. So he's going to recreate a whole kosher Thanksgiving feast, which I think is spectacular because he's going to make your Thanksgiving table different than what you would normally do. And then in December, we have another chef returning, which I'm really happy about, who's going to recreate dishes that is great for celebrating the upcoming New Year's and Hanukkah season.
Very good. And tell me, what is the cost of these classes?
Well, Jeffrey's class is $140. It's a very intense hands-on class. We do serve wine at the end. We never serve in the beginning, plus food. Plus you get the booklet that has all the instructions and the notes that we have created to make you remember. The kosher classes are $95 per person per class, which includes a subscription to Food and Wine magazine or Travel and Leisure magazine, recipes, wines, and a tasting of all the dishes. People can buy the classes in series, which reduces the price, which many people do because they want to take the two or three classes in a series.
Now, Jeff's class, you said, is $140. Yeah. Are the others less?
The others are $95.
What happens if I buy it in a series of three?
If you buy the regular chef demonstration classes in a series of three, it would be $270 so it reduces it to $90.
And how do people go about reserving the classes?
You could actually visit our website at degustibusnyc.com. You can give us a call at 212-239-1652, and you could either speak to Emmy or myself, and we could kind of guide you through the classes. If you want to be put on our mailing list, please visit the website and fill out the form or give us a call.
Okay. Thank you very, very much, Sal.
Thank you.
As always, it's great talking to you. And I can attest that the classes are fantastic. I've been here before.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful, and I'm really happy that you're reaching out to the community and really making them understand that there are such wonderful events out there for them that they could really learn from and utilize. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Sal. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And please come in and listen to us next week when our guests will be David and Zev Brooks, who will be talking about a wonderful, wonderful movie I happened to see last night called The Yankees. It's a Haredi yeshiva baseball team. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, and at the same time, there is such a tremendous amount of humanity. It's a great story. Please listen in next week, same station, blacktalkradio.com/kosherscene at 8 p.m. next Wednesday night. Thank you very much, one and all. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.